The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is your source for NPR news and NPR programming for 32 consecutive springs, 91.3 KUAF. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, March 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. On today's program, we take note of the first day of spring with a few minutes devoted to our co-inhabitants of the season, insects. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek will help us understand more about beneficial insects in our gardens. And then I'll talk to a pair of guests who have a distinct interest in bees. Brad Keck, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Beekeepers Association, and Sinat Sirinaninan, author of the new book, Vanishing Bees. First, Arkansas has the fastest growing prison population in the nation, and costs continue to rise. A new law aims to expand a program that sifts out low-level offenders from state prisons and sends them to community correction centers. Arkansas Public Media's Sarah Weitz-Kotacek visited one of these centers to learn how it's different.
The new law focuses on low-level violators, people who test positive for drugs on parole or write bad checks. It lets them go to a correction center instead of sharing barracks with murderers in prison. Benjamin Vestal has spent most of his life locked up for drug, theft, and fraud-related crimes. The 26-year-old says prison is scary. When you get there, they ask where to send your body if anything happens.
You can either be buried there or they can contact your family. And like just right then, you know that you're there for you got to defend yourself. You got always got to be looking over your back. It's crazy.
Vestal has been in Little Rock's Community Correction Center for 9 months for breaking and entering and theft. He had the chance to go there instead of prison, and he took it. It's a low-security residence with shared dorms, classrooms, and an open meeting space. Every day, 150 yellow-clad residents gather in a large gymnasium to resolve conflicts.
Change places real quick. While you're both out here, just change places. Mr. Kelly, you need to write your tickets correctly. Go ahead.
Center staff stand at a podium to read the tickets the men have written up on one another.
Staff member told me to go outside, stand up outside, and he told me another resident, shut the F up, I'm eating my sandwich. Just give me some steps out here on top of this.
Yes, Eric, I own this, and I can try and maintain my anger and remember to be respectful to all the other residents in here at all times and do what I'm told.
I accept.
Squash it. Everyone says squash it, and then the men shake hands. Department of Community Corrections spokeswoman Dinah Tyler says residents get therapy and classes to learn basic life skills.
Some of these people come in here and they honestly haven't had any kind of structure in their life. Might have had an absent parent or two absent parents raised by some other family member.
The residents learn what it's like to have structure. They're doing chores or are in classes from 4:30 in the morning until lights out at 10 o'clock. Tyler says prisons are just too big and cash-strapped to offer that kind of help. She says about half of people in prison return after release, but at these centers, it's down to nearly a quarter. Vestal says he healed some wounds from his childhood there, and he's got new ways to cope without drugs.
I realize how to deal with things without being high, like feelings, stress with different temptations and anger issues, like you learn to deal with that sober.
Vestal says he wants to stay free this time. His family has helped him line up a job and a place to live, and they're waiting to see the real proof. Now about 1,600 male and female parole violators will go through similar programs around the state. It's results of a two-year-long task force that found the change could bring several hundred million dollars in savings to the state. The changes take full effect January 1st. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
Arkansas Public Media is a collaborative effort of Arkansas's public radio stations and is funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can find out more at arkansaspublicmedia.org or at the Arkansas Public Media Facebook page.
Thousands of listeners to KUAF give annual or monthly gifts online at supportkuaf.org.
It is Monday, March 20th, 2017. Spring arrives. today. And also arriving is Michael Tilley from his office in Fort Smith with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, happy spring to you.
Well, happy spring. I've been thinking over the weekend, now that we're on the air, maybe we can solicit some investors, and you and I start a company. And we do designer holsters for people who wear guns on campus. And we could bedazzle them. We could, you know, make them look good for sororities and cool for fraternities. I think it's a great business model. So if anybody wants to invest, they know how to get a hold of us, right?
They do. They do. Okay. Hey, it wouldn't be a bad idea, perhaps, to put a little bit of money in homes in Fort Smith. Home sales numbers are doing well.
Yes. And again, as it's always nice, Fort Smith metro areas, we've said, has been beat up pretty bad. But last couple of years, it's found its footing. It's hanging on. And in Sebastian and Crawford County, there was, for the first 2 months of the year, a little over $43 million in home sales. That was up about 4.6% in terms of the price. And they're up 6.6%. in terms of units. And so we're continuing to see that grow. I know it sounds like a broken record, but over the last 2 years, as the numbers continued to improve, you just kept wondering how long that pace of growth could continue. Well, it's continuing into 2017. Even more impressive, for example, Crawford County, which kind of has struggled, they had an almost 20% increase in their average home sales price in February compared to the same time last year. So that's a healthy market. And considering how low the average home sales prices have been, that 20% increase is not really inflationary. It's not anything that, you know, would suggest a bubble. It's just the market kind of catching up again to the rest of the state and the rest of the economy. We're seeing similar gains in Sebastian County. And what's more, it's really turning into a good market. Inventory levels are low. Properties are selling quicker. They're getting multiple offers. So it's interesting to see a lot of the dynamics we've seen for the past 3 or 4 years in that very healthy Northwest Arkansas economy. We're seeing hints of those good dynamics in the Fort Smith metro also.
In the story that's at talkbusiness.net, a couple of the realtors that you talked to mentioned balance, that there's balance in the market, meaning that buyers and sellers are even footing, and they seem to think that's a good thing.
Yes, it's a good thing. Now, you know, the elephant in the room are interest rates. The Fed just boosted the rates. The thinking on the street is that they may boost rates another twice more this year. The rate that the increase, the 0.25% increase of the federal funds rate that we saw go up this early this week, for a $200,000 home, that's going to add about another $60 onto the monthly mortgage payment. I don't see that yet being a deal killer, but if you add another $60, you know, it's $120 a month. You know, we'll see what happens through the year. I suspect we'll see this type of expedited home sales because people really are wanting to get in front of the interest rate increases.
Right. All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about this story and so many others, including what happens at the legislature daily, by going to talkbusiness.net. Michael, happy spring. Thanks for spending some time with us.
All right. You're welcome, sir.
It's a big week on Capitol Hill. First up, questions and answers in an open hearing about Russia, the election, and the president's allegations that his campaign was wiretapped.
The question will remain, why would the president do this? And that's a question the president will have to answer.
I'm Audie Cornish, and a preview of the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Circle of Life Hospice knows that every day can be challenging when loved ones are coping with a life-limiting illness. Since 2000, Circle of Life Hospice has assisted thousands of patients and their families with these challenges. Help is available at 800-495-5511 or online at nwacircleoflife.org. It's spring break, did you know? Spring break activities at Hobbs State Park include an exhibit scavenger hunt tomorrow morning beginning at 9. Families are invited to participate in a self-guided scavenger hunt through the visitor center and its exhibit area. It's all free and it's open to the public. Arkansas Public Theater will present Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck beginning March 31st, multiple show dates in April. Now, tomorrow night at 6:30, you can join Lenny and George at the Fayetteville Public Library for a scene from the play. That event will include a talkback session led by Kelly Haley, reference librarian. Explore the themes and lessons of the play, speak directly with the actors and director, and ask questions about the play and theater. For information, ArkansasPublicTheater.org or 631-8988. And Billy D. Higgins, Associate Professor of History at UA Fort Smith, will present Take Me Out to the Ball Game, History of Baseball in Fort Smith, March 26th at 1:30 p.m. at the Clayton House. Higgins will review the notable teams, players, and sponsors of the professional, semi-pro, and American Legion baseball teams in Fort Smith and surrounding areas. Seating is limited. Reservations are available by calling the Clayton House at 783-3000. And still to come on today's show, bees and spring.
A swarm is actually a very cool thing to see. It's a very neat thing. It's a wonder of nature. And it means that one of two things. It means success in the springtime for a hive that's made it through the winter, has plenty of bees, and has the resources to basically split. Or the queen is not doing so well.
We learn what to do if a colony of bees finds your property, and later why many people who all want to help bee populations thrive can't seem to always work together.
Basically, asking this question by bringing together all of these different stakeholders and their representatives into one room, okay, and having them sit around at the table and talk with each other.
And just ahead, other insects that you want hanging out in the garden. We celebrate spring's arrival on today's Ozarks at Large. Spring officially begins today, but it's been feeling like it for quite a while now. Mother Nature certainly seems to think so. And as many of you get ready for planting season, Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Megan Langford, the lead horticulturist at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, about the kinds of insects you should welcome into your garden and how to get them to stay.
I don't know a lot about gardening. I probably know less about insects. But so bees are sort of the, I think, the one we all know.
Sure.
Those are good. Are there kind of ones that maybe don't come to mind that are good for your garden?
So when we typically talk about beneficials, we typically talk about just the adult because they're very easy to identify. Even if you take an introductory entomology course, you're going to look at just the adults to learn how to identify. But the whole life cycle occurs in the garden. And so you want to look at the egg and the juvenile stages as well as the adult so that you don't accidentally kill something that you actually want in the garden.
So what kind of insects are we talking about here?
Different insects. So beneficials would be things like damsel bugs, ladybugs, let's see what else, lacewings, wasps from the Braconidae family, ground beetles, which are the Carabidae family, soldier beetles, and then praying mantises. Those are some of the most common ones that you'll see in the garden.
And so what do all these, I know every insect probably does something different for a garden, but what is sort of the overall
overall benefit of they these? Either eat or parasitize different insects that we don't want in our garden. So for example, things like ground beetles, which is a very diverse family of beetles, they eat everything from maggots, wireworms, ants, aphids, slugs, and even some weed seeds. So they have a large variety of different things that they eat. Things like the braconid wasps, they're actually parasitoids, and so they deposit their egg inside of the host. The larva develops inside, the pupa comes out, and then when the pupa hatches out, it actually kills the original host. So that's weird and creepy.
A little
but
vicious,
cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also kind of cool.
Yes.
Exactly. How can you keep these insects around your garden? What's the best way to kind of make sure that they're there through their whole life cycle?
Sure. Well, one, you want to encourage them to come in. So a few ways that you can do that is you want to provide water, make sure that they have something to drink, and you can do that with a bird bath. You could do it with a small pond. You can even do it with a specific native plant called Silphium, and I apologize, I can't remember the second part of the name, but it's called cup plant. And the leaf, actually, the way it attaches to the stem of the plant, it forms a cup. And so when you have dew, it will go down in there and form a little pool that they can come drink from. There are a variety of plants, and I apologize, I don't have that list with me, that you can use, because a lot of times the adults actually feed on nectar and pollen. So if you have things like sweet alyssum, borage, and a lot of other perennials as well will bring in, bring them into the garden. And then for over winter, you want to have clump-forming grasses or ornamental grasses, and that gives them a place to hide during the winter where they can really buckle down in case there's bad weather, and they'll be able to basically hibernate in there for the winter. And then one really important thing is if you use pesticides, if you choose to, you want to be very specific as to what ones you use, because beneficials are killed along with the non-beneficials when you use pesticides. So you want really, you want your garden to be its own microcosm of different organisms. You can also, if you choose not to use pesticides, there are a lot of services now online that you can order beneficials in. And so you can order the beneficials in that you want to target the pests that you have in your garden.
Very interesting. Spring is coming early.
Yes.
What is sort of your advice to gardeners with this kind of unusual, you know, timeline?
Sure.
I think it's a little bit earlier.
Yeah, quite a bit earlier.
Yeah.
You want to get out and scout earlier, you know, look for pests earlier than you normally would. Keep in mind also that insects actually develop based on the temperature. So the warmer it is and the longer that it's warm, the more generations you're going to get of the good and the bad bugs. So really just doing what you would do a little later on in the season, keep an eye out for the non-beneficials in your garden, and then, you know, you have to make a decision. Do you want to leave them and allow beneficials to come in? Do you want to order in beneficials, or do you want to use pesticides?
Well, thank you for stopping by. I really appreciate it. This was really interesting.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Megan Langford, lead horticulturist at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. Coming up at the Botanical Gardens in the next couple of weeks, there is a monarch workshop on March 25th from 9 a.m. until noon. On March 28th, you can learn about landscape design and plant selection from 6 to 7 p.m. And on April 4th, Fayetteville Parks and Rec is hosting an invasive species class. If you'd like more information, you can just go to bgozarks.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Bees are at the top of the list of beneficial insects, though, to be fair, there are a few places you might not want them, like the eaves of your house. Brad Keck, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Beekeeping Association, says there are ways to avoid such a problem and keep homeowner and bee swarm happy. He says his organization is experiencing, in recent years, an uptick in the number of calls requesting help with safely transferring bees. He says he thinks this may be, anecdotal evidence that bee populations here are becoming a bit healthier.
I base that off of the number of swarms calls that we received last year. So we received a lot, which means that there's a lot of bees out there swarming. The bees don't normally swarm far from their old home. So, and you don't see a lot of beekeepers with their bees. They usually catch those swarms. So what we're seeing is feral swarms of bees and large numbers of them. That could just be a one-off and on my part, just wishful thinking. But I think that we're starting to see a strengthening population of bees in Northwest Arkansas. And a swarm, even though Hollywood has made it into bee movies that scare people, a swarm is actually a very cool thing to see. It's a very neat thing. It's a wonder of nature. And it means that one of two things. It means success in the springtime for a hive that's made it through the winter, has plenty of bees, and has the resources to basically split. Or the queen is not doing so well, and they've kicked her out, and they've already started new queens. Either way, this is how the bees propagate their species. And so what ends up happening is you have a swarm of bees. They've actually had success in the springtime. They've made it through the winter, and they've got plenty of food. They've got plenty of bees, and they're actually running out of space. So they cast off half the bees to two-thirds of the bees and the queen, and they go find another place to live. In the meantime, they go and collect on a tree limb, on a post, on the side of a wall, something like that. And they start sending out scouts in all different directions looking for a new home. And that's all that has happened. Now, the bees have eaten 3 days' worth of food. And because they still have to find a new place to live, fly to that position, and then start a new home. And so they don't have a home while they're in that clustered position. They don't have a home to defend, so they're not aggressive. And they've eaten 3 days' worth of food. So it's like you and I had Thanksgiving dinner and then try to fight. We're like, oh, we'll get that guy later. You know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So what ends up happening is that people are afraid of swarms because if you ever see like the bee tornado, it is kind of intimidating for most folks. But it's actually just absolutely wonderful to watch.
You said you've noticed a rise in swarm calls. What is a swarm call? When someone calls and there's one in their backyard or something?
Yeah, somebody's got one in their backyard, their front yard. You know, it happens here in Fayetteville quite a bit, especially, but all throughout Northwest Arkansas, all throughout the spring, we'll get calls from people that say, "I've got bees in my yard. Please come get them." And they're afraid, and it's understandable. They don't understand that the bees have no interest in them whatsoever. And they want me to come get them. Now, the survivability of a swarm of bees in the wild, a feral swarm of bees in the wild, is 30%. Hmm. And so the bees have a much better chance of surviving if I come get them or another beekeeper comes and gets them, gives them a home to live in, and sugar water to get them started. Otherwise, if they sit there for 3 or 4 days, they may run out of food, and they tend not to be near as nice after 3 or 4 days. And we get that quite a bit, is a lot of people wait until the last minute, or they wait to call us because they'll go someplace else. You know, call us right away. Call us, the Northwest Arkansas Beekeepers or Benton County Beekeepers. You know, call a beekeeper to come get them as soon as you see a swarm.
You mentioned that they might find a branch or a fence post or something like that. Could they find my house?
Well, they can find your house, and this is kind of where we're going. Is while they're collecting on a branch or while they're in the open where you can see them, that's where while they're looking for a new home. Once they've found one, and it may take 30 minutes or it may take 3 or 4 days, but once they've established what the best home is, they'll all fly off in that direction and take up new residence. The problem is that the bees don't distinguish between a tree and your house. And in fact, if it's got central heat and air, it's probably a little more comfortable for them. When a swarm happens, they send scouts off in every direction looking for a new home. And what the ultimate for them would be a hole in a tree 35 feet up with a southern exposure. You know, that's what they really would like. If that happens to be the eaves of your house, they're going to take up residence there. You know, and then you have an infestation. Now it becomes a much bigger problem for you and the bees because state law says that I can't charge you to remove those bees.
So if they're in my eaves and I call you, you can't get money from it. Mm-mm. You could come in, I suppose, if you wanted to do it for free.
Yep.
But if you don't, then who do I call?
Well, there's some local guys who have gotten basically the state requires that you get licensed and bonded as an exterminator. And so you have to pay for all the fees and all the insurance and all that. There's a couple guys in Western Arkansas who have those credentials. We can put you in touch with them. But there are just a couple you know, and it's expensive. They have, you know, they have to make their money back. And from time to time, I will go stand on a ladder in the middle of summer, you know, with a bee equipment on and vacuum up the bees. But, you know, I've got to tear out, I have to tear out those bees. And it is stressful on them. And once you start tearing up their home, they're not as friendly, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's not only does it take half a day, and it's unfun.com, you know,
yeah.
it's just not fun. It's not that productive for me. The queen can get killed, all kinds of things. It's just not. When we go catch swarms, we do it as a public service. We don't charge any money for it because we want to do what's right for the bees and we want to do what's right for the public.
What if someone is interested in beekeeping? They can call y'all as well, right?
Absolutely. Contact us or contact the Benton County Beekeepers Association.
Is it expensive to get into?
As any hobby is, it can be expensive to start. If you really get the bug, it's just like anything else. You're going to spend a bunch of money on it because it becomes kind of an addiction. At some point, most beekeepers reach the level of their incompetence and they decide that they don't want to have any more bees. But then I've always got equipment ready just in case I have to take in a swarm.
Brad Keck is the president of the Northwest Arkansas Beekeepers Association. You can find out more at nwabeekeepers.com, or you can find out more about the Benton County Beekeepers at their Facebook page. And there is also a Facebook page for the Western Arkansas Eastern Oklahoma Beekeepers Association. Even if Brad is cautiously optimistic about bees in our part of the world, there is still grave concern about bee populations nationally and globally. Many groups have an interest in restoring bee populations, farmers, beekeepers, scientists, really anybody who eats food. But formulating a collective approach to helping bees has been difficult. That's the subject of the new book, Vanishing Bees, by Sainat Sirinaninan and Daniel E. Kleinman. Sainat is an assistant scientist of biology and society in the Department of Community and Environmental Sociology at the University of Wisconsin. And he says he began to write the new book when he became interested in the social dimensions of the study of colony collapse disorder and the declining population of bees.
Well, so that is part of the issue of complexity in this case. There are different groups, whom we call knowledge cultures, who use different ways and means and assumptions to look at colony collapse disorder and why honeybees in general are dying more at higher levels and more often. And these different groups come at the issue from their own set of interests, stakes, histories, and interactions with each other. So this is like a key point that we make in the book, which is that how we know what we know about colony collapse disorder is deeply connected with the history and politics of relationships between beekeepers, scientists, growers, regulators. So these relationships have evolved historically, especially over the course of the 20th century. And these groups share histories of conflicts, cooperation with each other. And they each have their own interests in this issue. You know, growers see honeybees as tools that they can use to pollinate crops. For beekeepers, well, honeybees are producing honey that they can sell. But not only that, the bees are also pollinating crops, and beekeepers are earning income by renting out their beehives to farmers. Scientists in this whole situation have come up as experts who can help guide beekeepers and growers about making informed decisions about what's ailing honeybees or where to place beehives on a farm, etc. And then regulators are involved here in terms of monitoring and bringing policies that can affect honeybee health, such as pesticide regulation or regulation regarding what kind of honeybees can be imported and from where into the country. So So all these various folks, also I have to mention agrochemical manufacturers who make pest management tools that can have effects on honeybees. So all of these different folks, groups, have different stakes in the matter of honeybee health.
Well, at the risk of asking an incredibly naive question, most of the groups you mentioned have a vested interest in keeping honeybees healthy and plentiful. So why can't there be some sort of common ground to battle colony collapse disorder?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's actually the premise upon which the coda of the book is based. The coda essentially talks about a project that we started that builds on most of the book. And this project that that we're finishing up right now is basically asking this question by bringing together all of these different stakeholders and their representatives into one room, okay, and having them sit around at the table and talk with each other and together try to come up with alternative ways of looking and understanding honeybees and what's ailing honeybees. And these conversations that we sort of facilitated, a series of conversations, not just here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, but also at a beekeeping operations, growing operations, we brought the same set of people to these different places. They basically tried to leverage this common ground. It turns out that there is a common ground. Everybody cares for, all of these folks care for honeybees, but then they also care for other things that they use the honeybees for, that they depend on the honeybees for. So growers, yes, growers care for honeybees, and they need honeybees for pollination. But they also ultimately care for what kind of crop commodities they're able to produce using the honeybees, right? And not only do they use honeybees, but they also use pest management tools, pesticides, agrochemicals. And so when conversations came up where beekeepers thought that some agrochemicals were a problem, in these conversations, growers became very defensive. Mm. Right, they are afraid that such conversations could lead to certain tools being taken away from them, certain pesticides being taken off the table. Right, and so in that situation, tails go up, and defenses are erected, there is a block in the conversation. And a lack of trust happens there.
Sainat Surinaninan is the co-author of Vanishing Bees, Science, Politics, and Honeybee Health from Princeton Press. He co-wrote the book with Daniel E. Kleinman. He's also an assistant scientist of biology and society in the Department of Community and Environmental Sociology at the University of Wisconsin. And we'll hear more from that conversation Sunday on Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3 KUAF.
Your days are busy.
Work, school, errands, kids.
It never stops.
And the news never stops either.
You can keep up between Morning Edition and All Things Considered with Here and Now. Hi, it's Robin Young.
And Jeremy Hobson. Here and Now brings you breaking news, developing stories, the latest in the arts and innovation.
Asking tough questions, unpacking complex issues.
From across the country and around the world.
Join us.
Beginning in about 20 minutes on 91.3 KUAF. The fourth annual Ales and Tales is Saturday, April 1st from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Washington County Fairgrounds in Fayetteville. This fundraiser hosts handcrafted ales, all-you-can-eat Louisiana crawfish, and live music while raising money for local charities. Tickets and information at alesandtales.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas is putting a stop to its celebration of both Confederate General Robert E. Lee and civil rights icon Martin Luther King Jr. on the same day. As Jacob Kaufman, with our partner station KUAR, reports, Governor Asa Hutchinson is scheduled to sign a bill into law at this hour
to separate the two.
After today, only Alabama and Mississippi will still honor Lee and King on the same day. Arkansas has had a dual state holiday since 1985 when Bill Clinton, then governor, brought the two together. Arkansas's current governor, Republican Asa Hutchinson, has said after national tragedies like the Dylan Roof shooting and Freddie Gray's death in a Baltimore police vehicle, it's important to show Arkansans where their government stands.
Baltimore had riots in the streets because it was divided after a terrible tragedy. In South Carolina, the state came together in a time of healing even after it set an example for the nation.
The new law will still honor Lee, though, moving him to an October commemoration. Arkansas's governor is hosting a ceremony to honor what he calls this landmark bill. For NPR News, I'm Jacob Kaufman in Little Rock.
Spring break begins around the state today, and Ozark Regional Transit is again offering free fares through Friday. The agency is waiving fees for the 14 fixed routes in northwest Arkansas through the end of the week. Pre-scheduled paratransit and demand and response services this week still carry a $2.50 charge. The city of Bentonville is again a Tree City USA, as designated by the Arbor Day Foundation. The city says it earned the title for meeting four requirements, including having a tree board, a tree care ordinance, an annual community forestry budget, and an Arbor Day observance. The city is one of 34 in Arkansas to match all of those requirements, including Fort Smith, Gentry, Fayetteville, Eureka Springs, Springdale, West Fork, and Holiday Island. The collegiate basketball season is over now for the region. Yesterday, the Arkansas Razorback men's team dropped a 72-65 decision to North Carolina in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Arkansas trailed by as many as 17 points in the first half before leading by as many as 5 points late in the game. Late last week, the John Brown University women lost their second-round game in the NAIA tournament in Billings, Montana. As basketball ends, baseball and softball continue. Yesterday, the Arkansas Razorback baseball team completed a three-game sweep of Mississippi State to open the SEC season 3-0. Up next, a Wednesday night game against the University of New Orleans at 6 at Baum Stadium. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith baseball team will be in Shawnee, Oklahoma tomorrow night for a game against Oklahoma Baptist. This weekend, the Lions dropped 2-3 against St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. The next home game for UAFS is Friday afternoon against Oklahoma Panhandle State. And the Arkansas softball team, now 21-6, after taking 2-3 games this weekend from Tennessee in Fayetteville. The next five Razorback softball games are away from home, but Arkansas will return to Bogle Park Wednesday, March 29th, for a single game against Oklahoma State. This weekend, Chuck Berry, the rock and roll pioneer, died at age 90. Thanks to a pair of our favorite Arkansas music archaeologists, Sandra Cox Birchfield and Eric Johnson, we can share a couple of Arkansas connections to Berry. Over the weekend, Sandra shared a photo of the rock and roller taken in Fayetteville in 1959. He was performing on the University of Arkansas campus for a spring festival at the U of A. She also explained that Chuck Berry's spring 1959 performance wasn't the first rock show at the university. That distinction, she believes, belongs to Arkansan Sonny Burgess, who played on campus in 1955. And Eric Johnson, a former Fayetteville resident now residing in the wilds of Iowa, also shared a Chuck Berry-related artifact on social media this week, a recording of the fabulous Cape Brothers covering Chuck Berry's You Never Can Tell during a show at George's Majestic Lounge in 2000. The Cates lineup included Ernie Cate on vocals and keyboards, Earl Cate on guitar and vocals, Ronnie Uff on bass, David Renko on sax, and the late William Porky Hill on drums. Chapel Bell. The Cate Brothers performing Chuck Berry's You Never Can Tell at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in 2000, as shared by Eric Johnson. Our continued thanks to Eric and Sandra Cox Birchfield for their continuing effort to keep music in Arkansas of the past and present very much alive. And just ahead on today's show, more Arkansas music as this week's Arkansongs remembers Jim Dickinson. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Monday, March 20, 2017. Spring has sprung. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. My second favorite season right now.
What's your first favorite?
Summer. Can't beat summer.
Oh.
Baseball, and it's light till 9 o'clock, and fireflies.
Oh, I don't know.
Watermelon.
Fall is so beautiful here.
It is, but fall hangs out with winter, and I'm not a big friend of winter.
I see your point.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, today's the first day of spring break.
Yes.
And if you have looked up and realized your children are at home and you weren't really expecting that, go get Friday's What's Up.
Right.
And it will tell you, or go online at nwaonline.com and find our spring break guide of things to do.
You grew up in Kansas.
Yes.
When you were in public school, did you have a spring break?
No.
We just powered through.
Yeah, we had Good Friday.
We didn't even do that. But the good news was, if you didn't have snow that year, you were out at like May 7th or 8th.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But this fall break and spring break, no, that's for those young kids that aren't as tough as we were.
Well, I will say that I remember by the time you got to late March or early April, and you'd been going to school since January 2nd or 3rd, you know, without a break. I see why spring break exists.
Except
you need
that we
it.
Usually hadn't been going since January 2nd or 3rd without a break.
Because you got snow.
Because we'd been snowed in two or three times.
Yeah, okay.
So, it's also a season that happens, it's been happening for several years in Fayetteville. It's time for the Goddess Festival.
Right.
And this year, they're going to do a healing ritual that sounds really cool. And you might be surprised to find this in What's Up, an arts and entertainment magazine. It's just like a lecture. You know, we're going to approach mm-hmm. it that way and mm-hmm. say, in this 10-day celebration of the feminine divine, on Wednesday, they're going to do a healing ritual. And Joy Caffrey, who's been an energy medicine practitioner for more than 20 years, is one of the healers. They decided that with the divide that has come with the current political climate, let's see how nicely we can say that it was time to try to heal some of that. So they'll open the ritual and call the seven directions, even though this is not Wiccan. And then they'll do a release of everything unpleasant and a calling of everything wonderful.
Okay.
And they suggest that if you want to, you can do this at home by setting aside some quiet, uninterrupted time to release old emotions and let go of bad habits, negative thinking, you know, those sorts of things.
You could do it on a walk, couldn't you?
You could.
Yeah.
And contemplate what you'd like to bring into your life.
Sure.
Which is really cool this time of year anyway, since
right.
it's spring and new beginnings. And then the last part is to figure out how to manifest what you just thought about. So what would make you happy?
I mean, this is when you open up a new business, you have a business plan, right?
Right.
And I don't know if that's probably not
That's a new you plan.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll have all sorts of other things. They'll have music and crafts and things for kids and all sorts of interesting, fun things. But this particular thing happens at 6:30 Wednesday at Unity of Fayetteville, and it's free. And you can visit goddessfestival.com for a full schedule.
Becca Martin Brown is a features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Arkansas-er James Luther Dickinson, born November 15, 1941 in Little Rock, is rightly regarded as a prime mover in and promoter of the Memphis music scene beginning in the 1960s. He was called in to sing and play on what's been called the last great Sun Records single, Cadillac Man, by the Jesters from 1966. Dickinson, along with several others, including ironically fellow Little Rock natives Robert Palmer and Randall Lyon, helped found the Memphis Country Blues Festivals of the late 1960s. And in other circles, the Dickinson name has become known through Jim's musician sons, guitarist Luther and drummer Cody, and their band, the North Mississippi All-Stars, and their own numerous side projects, including Luther's involvement with rock band the Black Crowes. But Jim Dickinson is probably best known for his studio session work. That's Dickinson playing piano on the Rolling Stones song Wild Horses, recorded in December 1969. It was released as a single in 1971 and hit the top 30. Jim Dickinson played on many other low and high-profile sessions over the decades, including Bob Dylan's 1997 comeback album, Time Out of Mind.
The air is getting hotter. There's a rumbling in the sky. I've been wading through the high muddy water with the heat rising in my eyes. Every day your memory grows dimmer. It doesn't haunt me like it did before. I've been walking through the middle of nowhere, trying to get to heaven before they close the door.
Jim Dickinson's session work really coalesced with his work in the studio group The Dixie Flyers, which included fellow Arkansas-ers Michael Utley of Blyville and Sammy Creason, who grew up in Jonesboro. Dickinson was de facto band leader, although he says it was really guitarist Charlie Freeman's band.
I am getting the spirit in the dark. Getting the spirit in the dark. People moving, oh, and we're grooving. Just getting the spirit in the dark.
Jim Dickinson and the Dixie Flyers backed Sam and Dave, Jerry Jeff Walker, Brooke Benton, Sam the Sham, and Lulu in the studio, among a variety of others, including Huntsville native Ronnie Hawkins and Aretha Franklin for her classic 1970 album, Spirit in the Dark. Dickinson, however, said his favorite work with the Dixie Flyers at Atlantic Records was their Carmen McRae album. Through the 1970s and 1980s, Jim Dickinson increasingly transitioned to the other side of the control room glass in the role of record producer, but he never really left studio session work behind, whether in Memphis or beyond. Arkansas-er James Luther Dickinson died August 15, 2009, in Memphis, Tennessee, at age 67. As a solo artist, band member, producer, and studio player on sessions large and small, Jim Dickinson's music continues to reverberate. Here in its entirety from 1966 on Sun Records of Memphis, Tennessee, is Cadillac Man by the Jesters, but featuring Little Rock native Jim Dickinson, guesting on lead vocal and piano.
When I was going down the highway and I beat up every tree, smoking like a speed ship, a police at me.
from 1966, Cadillac Man by the Jesters, featuring Little Rock native Jim Dickinson, guesting on lead vocal and piano. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Executive producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs is underwritten by the Old State House Museum in Little Rock, a museum of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. Arkansongs, since 1998.
The Jones Center in Springdale is hosting its annual Spring Break Week today through the 24th. Each day includes themed events for children as well as ice skating and swimming opportunities. More information is available online at thejonescenter.net. And 91.3 is supported by the City of Eureka Springs, featuring a variety of activities for the outdoor enthusiast of all ages. Eureka Springs is surrounded by various river and lake waterways, including Lake Leatherwood. This 1,600-acre city park is crisscrossed with hiking and biking trails and a spring-fed lake. Eureka Springs escape information available at eurekasprings.org. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. We'll have brand new shows all the way through this spring break week. Don't forget, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson can be heard tonight at 8 o'clock. On 91.3, then Peter Vandegraaff with classical music through the rest of the nighttime hours beginning at 10. Classical music on 91.3 every Sunday through Thursday night beginning at 8. And if you want to hear classical music at any time, you can do that by going to KUAF2. You can find KUAF2 on your HD radio, on the free KUAF app, and by going to KUAF.com. And when you go to KUAF.com, you can also find past stories and full editions of Ozarks at Large. Have a great rest of your Monday. Thanks for spending some time with us.